Hi, and welcome to an audio tour of Minnesota's new North Star Rail Line. You're about to ride through one of the most important historic trade corridors in the state, and the train you're on is just the newest way to travel this route, taken by Indians, fur traders, soldiers, explorers, immigrants, and farmers before you. In this podcast, you'll learn a bit about the towns and places you're seeing along the North Star Line, and about the lost history of the land between the Twin Cities and the end of the line out in Big Lake. I assume that you're starting this podcast at Target Field. Take a seat on the top level of the train for the best view of the landscape along the way. I'll be pointing out sites along both sides of the track, so sit wherever you're comfortable. This podcast isn't timed to mention the exact place you are at the moment, but to keep from getting too far ahead of ourselves, you should pause the podcast at the end of each section and start it again as the train leaves the next station. My name is Jeff Jones. This podcast is produced by Minnesota Public Radio. The North Star leaves from Target Field. It's one of the newest buildings you'll see on your journey, and really it needs no introduction. But on the other side of the train platform is a much more historic building that houses office space and studio space. But when it was built, in 1913, it was actually an automobile factory. Car making was still so new that the assembly line hadn't even been invented. So a team of workers assembled one Ford Model T from start to finish at this factory, and then they started on the next. It's believed to be the tallest automobile factory ever built, and its height is just what made it obsolete when Henry Ford built a sprawling assembly line over in St. Paul in 1924. The Ford Center is one of about 60 buildings that make up the Minneapolis Warehouse District. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. In the late 1800s, these buildings were full of goods and parts for the milling industry and the residents of a quickly growing region. This very rail line was the district's link to the outside world, Wisconsin and Chicago to the east, and in the direction you're traveling, the entire northwest United States. As you cross the Mississippi River, remember that you are above St. Anthony Falls, so river shipping is not a big part of the story of our journey. Even though our route follows the Mississippi River closely, it's the roads and the rails that built this part of Minnesota. The bridge that takes you out of the Warehouse District was the first one ever built across the Mississippi in Minnesota. For Minneapolis in 1863, it was a big deal, because it linked St. Paul to Minneapolis for the first time by rail. By road, that link was made a few years earlier with the original Hennepin Avenue Bridge. The new one dominates the landscape out your right window as you cross the river. When that was put up in 1855, it was the first bridge to cross the Mississippi River anywhere along the whole length of the river. And while we're talking superlatives, I'll tell you that the island the train crosses here, Nicolet Island, is the only inhabited island on the river. It's not only got houses, but it's got a high school, a football field, and a restaurant. Once you're on the east side of the river, the train climbs back to street level in northeast Minneapolis. This is a traditionally industrial and working class neighborhood. Poles, Slovaks, Finns, Russians, and Ukrainians were some of the earliest immigrants who came to work in the flour mills and factories of St. Anthony and Minneapolis. The biggest factory you'll pass on your trip will be on the left of the train, between the tracks and East River Road. It's hard to miss. This factory has been making weapons and parts for military equipment since the 1930s, when the federal government turned a small pump maker into a major supplier to the Navy. The company, which was called Northern Pump back then, quickly gained a reputation for quality, and it's been supplying the military ever since. The plant is now owned by BAE, the second largest defense contractor in the world. The Fridley North Star Station will be coming up soon, so pause this podcast now and start it again as the train leaves the Fridley Station. By the way, if you like what you're hearing, or if you have comments or questions, just shoot me an email. I'm at jjones@mpr.org. That's M as in Minnesota. Fridley Station, the train soon crosses over Lock Lake. You'll see it on the left. It's the last of a bunch of lakes on Rice Creek, which drains into the Mississippi River just a few hundred feet further east. Now, this train line closely follows the path of the river as it stretches to the north and west of Minneapolis. But the first main path along the same route you're traveling was actually an oxcart trail. It carried caravans of furs from the Red River in Canada down to the trading post at St. Paul, where they could be loaded onto boats. When the U.S. military came to the area, it improved that oxcart trail into a better road. And where there are roads with travelers and soldiers, there are soon to be inns and taverns. That's what happened here in Fridley. John Banfill opened an inn along the road. Not long after, he put up a sawmill and a general store there along Rice Creek. As early as 1851, he laid out a whole town here that he called Monoman, which comes from the Ojibwe word for wild rice. Wild doesn't describe much of this part of Minnesota anymore. One exception, though, is the Springbrook Nature Center that you'll see on the right side of the train. As recently as the 1980s, this park was surrounded mostly by undeveloped land. Now, though, it's an island of nature surrounded by suburbs. It's actually one of the most popular parks in the metro area. 3 miles of hiking trails take visitors through wetlands, prairie, and oak savanna, and it's a great place to see wildlife. Looking at the nature center as you go by is a chance to see what a lot of this landscape was like for the traders who traveled the old original roads along this route. It was mostly open prairie with a scattering of oak groves and some lakes and rivers. By and large, 19th century travelers describe this part of Minnesota as profoundly beautiful. John Banfield's little town of Monoman was eventually renamed Fridley after a local politician, and it has grown a lot in just these last 30 years. But not every prospective town along this route enjoyed the success of John Banfield's. Many landowners tried their best to create town sites along the road with inns, mills, and shops, but few actually amounted to anything. You've never heard of Itasca or Marseillais, but there was a time when they were hopeful settlements just like Fridley, with a steamboat landing on the river and an inn along the road. The next stop on the line is Coon Rapids. Pause the podcast here and start it again as the train leaves the Coon Rapids station. Pulling out of the Coon Rapids station, the train passes under County Highway 9 and then East Main Street. Then, you'll be riding through a huge factory. On either side of the tracks, you'll see factory buildings and chemical tanks. This complex is the headquarters of Hoffman Enclosures, which makes boxes and containers to protect electrical equipment. Railroads always attract industry along their path because they make it so easy to move goods in and out in a hurry. Now, as the railroad grew in this direction in the 1860s, it changed every town it touched. Suddenly, little hamlets had easy access to the supplies they needed to really grow. In addition to passengers, one of the most important products coming up the line from Minneapolis was lumber. The massive white pines of Minnesota's North Woods were being cut and floated down the river to Minneapolis. There, they were turned into lumber, and then sent back north by train to the towns we're passing through now. In return, the trains carried the wheat and other crops that farmers here were growing back to the mills of Minneapolis and the steamboat landings in St. Paul. This same pattern of rails, settlers, lumber, and wheat built towns all across the Midwest. I'll take a moment now for train geeks. This line was built by the St. Paul and Pacific Railroad in the years after the Civil War. By the end of the century, it was part of James J. Hill's Great Northern Empire. The iconic Empire Builder, the passenger train that he created that runs between Chicago and Seattle, still runs along these tracks twice a day. These days, the rails are owned by the giant railroad company, BNSF. Pause the podcast now and start it again once the train leaves the Anoka station. Thank you. As the train pulls out of the Anoka North Star Station, look out the right window of the train, and you can catch a glimpse of one of Minnesota's oldest continuously operating hospitals. It opened in 1900 as the State Asylum for the Insane. Now, it's called the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. In a mix of original and new buildings on the sizable campus there, the center provides mental health services to adults from across the metro area. The treatment center sits on the banks of the Rum River, which you'll cross pretty quick after leaving the station. After the Mississippi, the Rum is the largest river the North Star Line crosses. Father Louis Hennepin originally named the river the St. Francis River. He was one of the first European explorers to see this part of the country. Though, when he saw this river, he was actually a prisoner of the Dakota Indians, who had captured his exploration party and taken them to their main village near Lake Mille Lacs. Since the Rum River flows out of Mille Lacs, Father Hennepin actually got here before he saw, and famously wrote about, the dramatic waterfall downstream that he named St. Anthony. That name stuck. This one didn't. The Dakota name for the river means spirit or spiritual, like mystical. But European explorers thought it meant the other kind of spirit. So, the river's name was mistranslated to Rum. None of the several attempts to change the Rum River's name over the years has yet been successful. Speaking of spirits, today Anoka is known, among other things, as the Halloween capital of the world. But back in 1854, it was known for its sawmill, powered by a dam on the Rum River. Later, Anoka became the region's top potato producer. It was also a home to a major shoe factory. Now, between Anoka and the next stop in Elk River, the train line runs very close to Highway 10. This is all pretty much the same path as those old military and oxcart roads. Highway 10 became one of the first paved highways in Minnesota back in the 1920s. Maybe that's because the state's first highway commissioner, Charles Babcock, was from Elk River. Or maybe it's because, about that time, wealthy city dwellers wanted to start driving their new cars to their new property in the lake country north and west of here. Either way, Minnesota's early network of paved roads became a model for the rest of the nation. The road you see here has actually been a four-lane divided road since the 1940s. Back to the rails, though. Don't think that the commuter train you're in today is a new idea. In the 1920s and 30s, a streetcar line ran all the way from Minneapolis to Anoka, making several trips each day. Getting on the train in Anoka, a rider could connect to streetcars running on any of the main commercial corridors in St. Paul or Minneapolis. Competition from cars and trucks started to weigh on this particular line in the 1930s. Its fate was sealed by a devastating tornado that hit Anoka in 1939, destroying the line's overhead wires. After you get through Anoka, the industrial parks and subdivisions that have dominated your route so far finally give way to farm fields. You're reaching the outer bands of the metro area now and starting to experience this corridor closer to the way it was when the railroad first came through. Agriculture was, of course, the main activity driving settlement west of Minneapolis. In order to encourage westward expansion, both the railroads and the U.S. government were offering land at remarkably cheap prices. Among the first farmers in this area was a man named Oliver Kelly. He was from Boston, and he didn't actually know much about farming, but he liked to read. And he taught himself how to farm by reading agriculture journals and writing letters to other farmers. He tried his hand at just about everything, though he settled on horticulture and gardening because the train line made it so easy for him to sell vegetables to the Twin Cities. After the Civil War, Oliver Kelly got a job with the federal government that sent him to the South to observe the reconstruction of farms there. Even though he was a Yankee, his connections as a Mason gained him access to Southern life. And seeing how other farmers plied their trade inspired him to create a different kind of fraternity. The nationwide network of farm families that he helped create would become the National Grange, which at one point had more than 1 million members. Its purpose was to share information about good farming techniques and to advocate for policies that helped farmers do their work. All you can see from the train is a plaque the Grange put up across the highway to honor Kelly, but the site of his farm lays just a little further on down the river valley. These days, the Minnesota Historical Society operates it as a living history museum. What is not there anymore is the town of Itasca, a tiny startup community that was actually listed on the train schedules for this route in the 1860s, but it never survived. Oliver Kelly was a huge promoter of Itasca. He and others hoped it would become the temporary territorial capital back in the 1850s. The small number of small steamboats that could travel the Mississippi River here could pull up easily, and the town was right on the oxcart road. But Itasca's primary commerce was with a group of Winnebago Indians who bought food, drink, and weapons there. When new treaties moved the Indians away from the Mississippi River, Itasca's best customers were gone. Please pause this podcast now and start it again when the train leaves the station at Elk River. We're leaving the Elk River station now, but that title actually has two meanings in this town. Very shortly, out the left side of the train, you'll see the other Elk River station. It's a power plant that these days burns trash to make electricity. But in the early 1960s, Elk River Station was the first nuclear power plant in the U.S. to serve a rural area. Nuclear power was still in its infancy at that point, and most reactors served large urban areas. Elk River generated the first nuclear power in Minnesota and was unique in the nation because it was part of a rural electric cooperative. The plant was mostly built for demonstration purposes, and the nuclear reactor here was shut down in 1968. But for a few years, Elk River claimed the nickname Atomic City. And as you get closer to the end of the line, if it's a clear day, you might be able to see the steam rising from the current nuclear power plant across the river near Monticello. As the train passes by downtown Elk River, you can see how close you are again to the Mississippi. After a dramatic oxbow here, the river strikes out almost straight west for a while. Elk River sits on a band of gravelly hills left behind by the same glaciers that carved out Minnesota's 10,000 lakes. There are still gravel mines right here in this area. These hills are the natural boundary between the forests and the prairie. To the north and east, the white pine forests provided the wood that built Middle America. To the west, the prairies grew the wheat that fed the nation. The story of westward expansion in Minnesota is a story of rails, wood, and wheat. The people who traveled up this road long before you sent back the food and materials needed to build a growing nation. As you complete your journey to Big Lake, I'll conclude with a few words about this podcast. First, this is a first draft of a story that I hope will someday be much more rich with sound and stories. Second, there's another story to tell about all the goods and people and energy that has traveled in the other direction along this corridor. That includes the first Minnesotans. So stay tuned in the future for the next chapter of this podcast that you can listen to on your way back to the city. Third, and most important, I want your feedback. Please drop me an email or phone call with your questions, comments, and criticisms about what you've heard and learned along this route. What did I leave out? What was confusing? Podcasting about place is ultimately podcasting about people. So please send me a message at jjones@mpr.org. Or call me at 651-290-1274. Enjoy the rest of your North Star train trip to Big Lake. Thanks for listening today. For Minnesota Public Radio, I'm Jeff Jones.